From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, how an undocumented immigrant rose to the top on Wall Street. We hear about her underground American dream. This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Juluisa Arce graduated at the top of her high school class in San Antonio and went on to succeed in college as well. She became a star of Wall Street. She was a vice president for Goldman Sachs by the time she was 27 years old. All this time while also being an undocumented immigrant living in constant fear of being deported. She tells her story in her memoir, My Underground American Dream. Her new book for young readers is Someone Like Me, How One Undocumented Girl Fought for Her American Dream. She spoke with Texas Public Radio contributor Yvette Benavides.
So your first book, My Underground American Dream, is a memoir. But why was it important for you to write now this book, Someone Like Me, for young readers?
So yeah, you're right that My Underground American Dream was meant for general audiences. And this new book, Someone Like Me, is geared towards young readers. And my biggest motivation for writing this book for that particular audience is because I remember being in middle school and never reading a book that reflected any of my experiences, and there never being a protagonist like me, a Mexican-American immigrant, undocumented child. And I wanted to make sure that other young people see themselves reflected in the books that they're reading at that age, because I think it really helps to develop a love for reading and for writing when there are stories that speak to your experiences. And so I am really excited for young readers to either learn about experiences like mine if they themselves haven't had those experiences, and then for those readers that who are immigrants or who are Latinas or Latinos or who have parents that are undocumented, that they can feel like their experiences are so important that there are books written about it.
And your book covers your entire childhood, growing up in, you were born in Mexico, moving to Texas, your teen years, and then briefly your time in college. From such an early age, you were able to know the differences between yourself and your parents. I mean, you were in Mexico, and actually your parents lived mostly in the United States, and they were working in the United States. And you wrote in your book, America was changing the way my mom dressed and even when she ate. That's very difficult for such a young child to understand that not only were you living apart from your parents most of the time, but that you all were so different and they're changing. So what was that like for you?
I think children, especially at that age, like, there are things that they recognize, and they're so smart. You know, kids that age, I think, can recognize these things, like that specific sentence that you mentioned, that America was changing the way that my mom dressed and even what she ate. And my mom loves the United States. She loves this country so much so that she even to this day will tell me that bacon tastes better in America. And my mom's a pescatarian. She doesn't eat red meat, and she didn't eat red meat ever since I can remember. And so I very distinctly remember her eating bacon with her eggs for breakfast one morning in Mexico. And I was so confused by it, because I was like, you don't eat red meat, and I'm not allowed to eat red meat because you don't eat it. And really feeling like I was losing my mom somehow. Like my mom was not the same person, and she would be gone for such a long time that every time she came back, she was a different person. And it was almost like getting to know my mom over and over and over again each time that she left and came back. And I also think that she gained a lot of confidence, though, from being in the U.S. And having her own business, and that being a very different experience than how she grew up in the Mexico back then, that where you didn't see a lot of women who were working and had their own businesses. And so I think there were both really positive things about about that. And then, of course, there was a lot of confusion for a child who was 8 and 9 years old when, you know, I didn't see my parents for a long time. And every time they came, they did seem different.
Yeah, and the thing that really comes through throughout the whole reading, I mean, I realize that and what a hardship that was, this separation. But your parents were so industrious. Like, they were always working. It wasn't like they had left because they were going on a vacation and they were going to go see what it's like in the United States, or, you know, they were traveling and exploring. I mean, they were working all the time.
Yeah. They were, and I think that's one thing that I really wanted to show in the book, and I'm so glad to hear that did come through, because I wanted to show just how entrepreneurial my parents were, and you know, especially my mom, just like always looking for ways that she could give her family a better life. And I've always been so impressed by my mother's ability to figure things out before there was Google and the internet. And you know, I can't imagine being in her shoes, like not speaking English and somehow still figuring out where can she go sell jewelry? Because that was my parents' first business, is bringing silver jewelry from our hometown, Taxco, to the U.S. And then later, you know, when through a bunch of different stories that I tell in the book, we ended up selling funnel cakes. And I still don't know how she figured out where to go buy a fryer and the dough and how to even make a funnel cake before you could, you know, go on Google and Google the recipe for a funnel cake. And so, and that's something that I'm so glad that I sort of saw that firsthand, because, you know, going back to like that first question about being in Mexico, my parents being here, I didn't see my parents in action, right? Like I didn't know what they were doing here. And then getting the opportunity to come to the U.S. and live with them and travel with my parents as they were going to all the different trade shows and really seeing how hard they were working. You know, they worked all day, every day. There were no such things as weekends for us. I mean, the weekends were when we did a lot of the work that we did, selling, whether it was selling funnel cakes or selling jewelry. And I think that's one thing that I hope people get from this book, is just how hard immigrants work to make it happen in America.
And then during that time that you were in Mexico and you were well taken care of, your sisters were with you and your other relatives, but at a certain point your parents make the decision to, I think you were 11 years old. You had a tourist visa and you came to the United States with them. What was that like?
Yeah, it was, you know, looking back on it now, it was this really bittersweet moment, because I would beg my parents to come bring me with them to live in the U.S. And it was sort of an ask that, it, you know, it's like one of those things where like you ask for something, but like you don't really want it. It was kind of like that, because as much as I wanted my parents to bring me to live with them, I also didn't want to leave my grandmother behind and my sisters behind and my cousins and everything. You know, my whole life was in Mexico, but my parents were here. And so when they finally brought me to live with them, and I tell this story in the book as to like why, you know, kind of like what was that last drop that my parents were like, we have to bring our child with us because otherwise she's going to grow up to be, you know, she's not going to have a good future. And it felt more like a punishment. In a way, it felt more like I was grounded, like I was being grounded, and it was a punishment that they were bringing me here because I was getting into a lot of trouble in Mexico. And at that time, my sisters were already off to college and high school in a different town, so I really was by myself. It was I lived with only my grandmother at that point, and so it was really bittersweet. I was so glad to be with my parents, and at the same time, I really missed my sisters. I especially missed my sister Nai. When I finished writing the book, I realized what a big part my sister was in the book. Mm-hmm. Because I think that, you know, a lot of immigrant families can probably relate to this, where the older children end up becoming very much parent-like figures for the younger siblings.
Mm-hmm.
And my sister became that for me. Like she was who took care of me for my entire childhood.
This is a book for young readers, and you do focus a little bit of the book on the topic of bullying that you endured in school. And lots of kids are bullied, but do you think that this bullying was a consequence of how different your story was compared to the other kids?
I struggled a little bit, to be honest, about how to present some of the issues that I faced in school and how to write about them in a way that was digestible for a younger audience,
mm-hmm.
and that also empowered young readers to know that other people have been bullied and that we've made it through to the other side in a way. I do think about early on when I was getting bullied in middle school because I didn't speak English, and so people would make fun of my accent, or they would make fun of the lunch that I would bring to school because it was stinky. And I do think that a lot of that was, you know, cultural. Just like I was not from here, and I had different customs than people have here. But I think, you know, some of the other bullying, especially that I experienced like in high school, when I was struggling with weight issues. And I think that's something that has, you know, that doesn't have anything to do with being born in a different country. That's something that I think, whether you were born here or not, some people will be able to relate to that and be able to relate to being made fun of because, you know, girls in school call you fat and pushing back against that. And I just, you know, I really do hope that kids that are going through that know that it gets better and that you have the power to not believe the things that people tell you, that the things that the mean things people say about you are just that, mean things. They're not truths about you.
I do think that this book is for a very wide and diverse audience. I mean, I don't see this as just a book for kids who are Latinos or immigrants or children of immigrants. I mean, I think that the issues that you're talking about around family and, you know, you weren't particularly happy at first when you found out about your little brother being born. And, you know, these are sort of like the normal universal things that we all deal with, including, you know, dealing with weight issues or dealing with people making fun of our difference or not feeling like we fit in or wanting to please our parents or wanting to understand our parents or wanting our parents to understand us. There's just this kind of element of loss or losses in these stories in your book that I think are very resonant. But by the time you were in the eighth grade and wanting to plan a quinceañera in Mexico, your mother reminds you emphatically that you cannot go to Mexico because if you return to Mexico, your visa had expired. You would not be able to return to the United States. That was a very difficult moment for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and thanks for making those other comments, because you're right. I mean, I think this book ultimately is not an immigration story. It's a story about family and the sacrifices we all make to achieve our dreams. It's funny that you asked about this quinceañera thing because, the day that I found out about my visa being expired and therefore I was undocumented, I cried so much that night, but I didn't cry about being undocumented. I cried because I couldn't go to Mexico to have this party that I had dreamt of since I was 5 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I cried about that night. Because when you're 14, when you're a child, I wasn't thinking what it meant to be undocumented. I mean, to me, I was just, you know, I was a regular American teenager who went to school and who was trying out for the dance team, and I was just regular. So this concept that all of a sudden this arbitrary piece of paper had an expiration date on it and it was expired now and I was no longer supposed to be in this country, I couldn't quite process that in my mind. So that night I cried about my party. It was only later when I was applying to colleges that I realized what it really meant to be undocumented, and that being undocumented really did come with very serious challenges that other classmates of mine were not facing.
This is Texas Matters. TPR contributor Yvette Benavides is speaking with Juluisa Arce, author of My Underground American Dream.
You were living in San Antonio, Texas, and in San Antonio, we do understand the importance of this rite of passage for young girls and the quince and the party, and it's what little girls dream about, as you did. But this moment about this piece of paper, this arbitrariness, and this thing that has such a hold over your life, and it's really a moment. Yes, you were upset you couldn't have the party, but this was a moment that now colors the rest of the book after this, is this realization about this expired visa and who you get to be and where you get to be and what that means. And it's this cloud over you for years after that about the secret that you're carrying with you. That's where, for me, the tension ramps up. It's just like suddenly there's this secret that you have to carry with you that no one else knows. That had to have been really lonely and scary for such a young person.
You're right, because, you know, as much as I want it to be normal, for lack of a better word, like, I knew that there were things that I couldn't do, right? And also, I had my mom's voice in my head telling me, you can't tell anyone. No le digas a nadie. You can't tell anyone. And you can't tell anyone because somebody might use this information against you. And so it did feel like a very lonely experience. And, you know, I think it's worth highlighting that when I was undocumented and I was going through this, it was in the late 90s, early 2000s, and there wasn't this dreamer movement where you had young people marching on the street and saying, I'm undocumented, unafraid, and unapologetic. There was nothing like that for me. There were no dreamer clubs in my school, and so I'm sure that there were other classmates of mine that perhaps were going through the same thing I was going through, who came here at a young age, who found themselves being undocumented now. But none of us ever talked about it. So it was a very lonely experience. I did feel like I have no one to talk to. There's no one that can understand what I'm feeling, what I'm going through. And you know, my parents were, my mom especially, was very supportive and very understanding. But she couldn't really even understand because she wasn't my age and she wasn't facing the things that I was facing, right? Like, she didn't know what it meant, what it felt like to have to make up a million excuses for why, like, I wasn't going to driver's ed to get my driver's license when I was 16, when everybody else in my school was doing just that. Or why, for me, you know, getting caught at a party was so much more stressful, because I felt like, oh my God, like, if I'm caught at this party and I could end up getting deported. So it was definitely a very lonely experience. And what I tried to do was just, in some ways, it was like tucking it in a mental closet and trying to just live my everyday life as if everything was okay.
You end up going to this place where you want to go to college and you don't have a social security number. Also in your first book, you write a very honest account about the way you bought a green card and then you had a social security number and you went on to work for Goldman Sachs. And some readers of that first work are quite critical of you and about this journey that you took, this fact of your life. But you've been able to address them. I was reading your blog and you go toe-to-toe, you know, point by point with, and, you know, I think for some of them it borders on trolling a little bit, but, and others, they're just very honestly saying that wasn't my experience. But it is a fact of your life. And it is something that led you. You went to the University of Texas at Austin, you excelled, you went on to this position in New York, and you went up the ranks and you became a vice president. And what I see there with you is that same work ethic and that same industriousness of your parents at work. And not so much the focus on how you got there, but then on what you did once you got there. And I think that that's a very American story. So what are your thoughts now? So here we are. You were able to become a citizen in 2014, and you finally were able to move from under this pall of the burden of the secret, or maybe that's always there. But what did you think in that July of 2015 when Donald Trump came down the escalator and announced his candidacy for president and declared these terrible things about Mexicans? What do you remember thinking?
Honestly, I remember thinking he might be the next president of the United States of America. And I might be one of the few people who, you know, thought that.
Why did you think
because
that?
Because I took it seriously. Because I, you know, I in the past couple of years, there has certainly been an increased awareness, a heightened awareness of the plight of undocumented immigrants and of immigrants in general in this country. But for those of us that have lived it all of our lives, we know that Donald Trump is not the symptom, right? Like he's the tip of the iceberg to what has been brewing for a long time. And he said things out loud that a lot of people think and believe. And it was definitely enraging. I was disgusted by the things that he said and the fact that there was not a bigger public outcry about the comments he was making. It seems like, you know, oh, of course he said that. And a lot of people were like, oh, that's not a racist thing to say. That's the truth. Some people are those things. And that was the part that was the most scary. It was not so much that he said it, but that the public reaction did not denounce his comments as what they were, racist comments against Mexicans and against immigrants and against Latinos. And so, you know, it's very disappointing, to be honest. Like, it just feels like, God, you know, especially what you were saying about those comments that people live on, you know, that people send to me all the time. People go through great lengths to find my email address and send me really nasty comments. And sometimes it feels exhausting. Like, what do I have to do to be considered American in this country? You know, I worked hard. I stayed out of trouble. I pay taxes. When I finally became eligible to become a citizen, I applied. I am a citizen now. And still, to many people, I will never be American enough. And so I have come to the understanding that I cannot wait for those people to consider me American. I just have to push forward because I am American. And there are a lot of people like me who are American, and we can't wait for acceptance. We have to start first and foremost by accepting ourselves and having peace about our lives and the very difficult decisions that we've been faced to make and forced to make. And that's how, you know, that's how I'm able to thrive and enjoy my life.
I mean, I know that there were no deportations in your family, but you all were separated. You all were living separately. I feel like you must have some kind of an insight about the family separations and detentions that have been going on in the United States.
To some degree, I know what it's like to be separated from your parents, right? Because as I've been reflecting on what's happening at the border, I also think about the parents who have made the journey without their kids, the kids that are left back home because there maybe wasn't enough resources to bring them along with them. And so I think about those kids, too, that are at home and their parents sitting in a detention center somewhere in the U.S. or, you know, just separated. And when we first started talking about this, like, what did I feel like when my parents came back? And they would be gone for months. And when you're little, months feels forever. And now I see these images and these videos of the families that have been reunited, and how the 2-year-old, 3-year-old doesn't recognize their mother. And they're crying, and they want to go back to the person who's been taking care of them for the past few months. And what breaks my heart about that is the trauma that these kids and these parents are going through is not something that's going to go away when the news stops covering the story. I mean, this is trauma that you have to heal from for many, many, many years. And it's hard work to get over that trauma. And it breaks my heart. It breaks my heart every time I see it, because in some small way, I know what it feels like. You know, I was never detained. My parents were never detained. So I can't even imagine what that additional level of pain feels like and how much more trauma it adds to these people's lives. It's heartbreaking and it's outrageous that this is happening in our country.
Is there some small part of you that worries that your citizenship will be taken away from you?
That's an interesting question, because I don't know if how many people are aware of this, but the Trump administration is undergoing a very extensive review of citizenships and revoking people's citizenships. For a number of reasons, because they believe that there's some sort of massive citizenship fraud, despite the fact that in the last decade there's been, you know, maybe 100 cases of people who have been whose citizenship has been taken away, and it's been for very serious things. And so there was one. I remember when I was reading about this, the first time that I was reading about it, feeling, you know, again having that feeling of like, am I ever not going to be afraid? You know, but then that feeling really quickly left me, because you know, if the government wanted to come after my citizenship, I would be ready for that fight, because I am not going to allow the government and these policies to push me back into the shadows, and I'm not going to allow it to take away my voice, because I'm afraid. I am American. I have lived here for more than 20 years. I have established a life here, and I have given of my talents and my work to this country. And in that process, I think that I have made this country better, as many immigrants in the process of wanting to give their families a better life make this country better. So I can't live my life afraid anymore.
And now that you've left Wall Street, you are a social justice advocate, and you work with Ascend Educational Fund, and you do lots of other work. What does that work mean to you in 2018?
Yeah, I am really, I'm really empowered by the work that I do. Through the Ascend Educational Fund, we've awarded over $400,000 in college scholarships to immigrant students, regardless of their immigration status. And each time that I meet one of these students who some of them have very similar stories to mine, and find themselves not being able to go to college, and then we're able to provide them with the financial resources to do it, it's very rewarding. And I recognize the, I feel like I've been very lucky and very blessed, and I feel like it's my responsibility to pay it forward and make a way for other people to achieve their dreams. And, you know, in 2018, this work is so much more important than it's ever been before.
Juluisa Arce is a CNBC and Crooked Media contributor, writer, speaker, and social justice advocate. She is the co-founder and chairperson of Ascend Education Fund, a college scholarship and mentorship program that assists immigrant students regardless of their immigration status, ethnicity, or national origin. She is the author of the memoir, My Underground American Dream. Her new book for young readers is Someone Like Me, How One Undocumented Girl Fought for Her American Dream. It's published by Little Brown. She was interviewed by Texas Public Radio contributor Yvette Benavides. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. You can write to us with an email to texasmatters@tpr.org. You could also write directly on our show page on our website at tpr.org. And that's where you can find past Texas Matters programs to listen to. And you can find us wherever you download those podcasts. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.